Fresh Art International presents conversations about creativity in the 21st century. This is Fresh Art International. I'm Kathy Bird. We've been sharing conversations about creativity on this podcast since 2011. Where in the world can you express yourself freely, share cultural knowledge, test inventive contemporary art practices, and build a transnational creative community in only 10 days' time? The cultural initiative known as CEC ArtsLink leads the way. Established in 1962, ArtsLink generates this sort of meaningful exchange through workshops, public programs, educational initiatives, and residencies. In fall 2023, I'm among 20 artists and curators from the United States, Kazakhstan, Armenia, Russia, and Belarus that CEC invites to the city of Almaty in Kazakhstan. Members of the local creative collective known as Bolt welcome us into their Malibu rave space. This will be our home base for 10 days. Constructed from a pair of stacked shipping containers, Bolt is the context for our workshops, talks, field recordings, and conversations in a program that explores the future of collective art practices.
Ворная природа реальности. Применяя Bolt Mentalic технологии.
Bolt members talk about how their space celebrates life. In the span of 4 years, they've cultivated a free-flowing safe zone for the queer community, for people of color, for anyone who feels socially and politically vulnerable in Almaty. They describe how Bolt is a space where horizontal networks are established, where together, in solidarity, people can oppose and resist patriarchy, capitalism, and white imperialism. One of the co-founders steps up to talk about the way she co-created a series of programs around the subject of decolonization.
Hi, everyone. My name is Aysana Nurkader. I'm a journalist, producer. I do some independent projects about decolonization, about ancient culture of Kazakh people and their traditions and the connection between ancestors and us, a new generation. Actually, we are an independent country, but we have not yet, understand the case of decolonization. We can't speak in our language fluently, and actually, we don't have our history, we don't have our culture, we don't know who we are, actually. This program was dedicated to study where did we come from and who we are now and how we just work with our past and how we can understand our future. We did a lot of activities, exhibition, poetry readings, special lectures about colonization, about our ancestors and culture, about music. And also we had a rave that was connected with Kazakh music. And we had some national games like Five Stones. I can show you if you want to come with me now. Yes.
Lydia Matthews, a curator, writer, and educator based in New York and Greece, sets the stage for the days to come. She introduces terminology and principles key to creating the best possible collective art projects. Lydia begins by comparing participatory and co-created art.
One of the things that often happens is that people don't make a distinction between participatory art and art that is actually co-created, collaboratively created. All the decisions are made together, the conversations happen, and the shape of the project happens through that dialogue. Participatory is often the case where you make something and then an audience comes and they become involved and they finish some aspect of it.
She suggests that reworlding is key to the future of collective art practices. Reworlding begins exactly where we are now, taking into account social, political, environmental, and economic realities of the communities we engage.
And it focuses on repairing a situation or maybe restoring it in some way. So this approach has to recognize the problems as they exist right now. If any of you are Vipassana meditators, this is exactly what you learn to do, is observe things as they are, not as you wish they would be. That almost always implies some kind of bodily engagement. You've got to be paying attention. You've got to be present. You've got to really have keen observation skills. The here and now is something you really have to grapple with in order to get to where you would like to be. This transition from what is now to what may be in the future. So rather than just imagining a future, like starting with what we have. I like that the way the past and the present and the future sort of weave into one another in this reworlding process.
Now for 7 of the principles that guide reworlding. 1, start with a question.
Keep it real. Start with curiosity and compelling questions, not answers or assumptions or visions of a world you're trying to get.
2, cultivate invitations.
Always have an invitation from the community. And what I mean by that is maybe you have an idea, but you still have to take that idea to people who you're working with to see if they're interested in it.
3, do the research.
I think it's really important to do very deep, multidisciplinary context research. First, you've really got to learn what's happened here in the past, wherever you're working. Also talk to people who were there. So a lot of interviewing in order to learn the different histories that exist.
4, respect and empower the community.
I always am interested in when I'm working with a group of people, what do they bring to the table? They bring their obvious selves, but a lot of times there are hidden skills and hidden talents and resources that they bring too. So at the beginning of a project, I really like to do that asset mapping, it's called, mm-hmm. where you try to find out what is everybody bringing into the room.
5, embrace uncertainty.
Practice collective humility. Recognize, accept, and embrace uncertainty, especially regarding project processes and outcomes.
6, attend to the quality of the project.
It's very important to put care into crafting the product so that it transforms what we already know. You've got to make something worthy of attention if you're going to get somebody's attention. So how it looks, how it feels, what the shape of it is also really important.
7, invest in relationships that engage collective joy and illuminate local knowledge.
Developing slow, sustained social relationships that keep the project going. And most important, cultivate joy, pleasure, and humor while working. For me, the goal is always to co-create local knowledge. I'm really interested in creating knowledge that is otherwise invisible or undervalued.
One morning, I invite Nara Bikina, a participant based in Siberia, to share her story.
Currently, I'm trying to bring attention to Tatar people, like make them visible. And also, as a Tatar person, I try to like reshape my identity and figure out who I am.
Well, let's share what is a Tatar.
Yeah, so it's like ethnic minority in Russia, and approximately 60,000 Tatars live in my hometown, Tumen. We feel sometimes invisible because in the space of the town, you can't tell that we live there. There's nothing that tells it. So that's why I'm trying to change the situation. When I was little, I felt that I'm a second-rate person because I'm not Russian. It's not cool to be not non-Russian person. And I didn't like this idea, and I don't like it right now. I don't want other people think that they are not worthy just because they are not Russian. So that's what I tried to change.
Is the language in your home Tatar?
Well, my grandma speaks poorly Russian. She speaks mainly Tatar, but I know only a few words in order to communicate with her. But it's also a complicated story because she's a Muslim person and she believes that women should obey. But I don't share these values, and not to speak Tatar was like my way to protest her. But now I understand I lost so many things because of my protest.
Share one of your projects that you've done in order to address the intensity of your feeling about your ethnic identity.
Yeah, so my last project was made in a team of other Tatar artists. We did an installation, which now is located in the streets of Tumen. Five poles with wooden squares, and these squares are painted with different ornaments and words in Tatar. So it was like socially engaged art because we invited town dwellers to participate. We asked them to think about what they know about Tatars or Tatar culture, and they expressed what they know.
And you are sharing a few photos with me. Are these your collaborators that you're showing me?
Yeah, our team was organized during our sort of tea party. I invited 10 Tatar artists to discuss our identity, and we didn't know each other at that point. And we just share what we think about Tatar culture and what we know about it. We found out that we all feel lost. We don't speak language. We know some tradition, but we are not very religious. And what makes us Tatar is like, it's a big question. So we made together some Tatar dishes. And it was very, very nice because I usually do this while they have like religious festivals or celebrations, but we try to do this like for us. So, and we did ochpeshmaks.
Little turnovers?
Yeah, with potato and meat. So we talked and we did these meetings a few times. And then we decided, oh, we need to do something for the whole town to make discussion bigger. And so that's how we did our project with installation.
And what is the response to your project?
It was very interesting because some people came and say, oh, we don't know anything about Tatars. And through the project we did, we had workshops, lectures, discussions, reading seminars, and people learned something through it. And it was great. Also, there were people who said, oh, I know much and I can share. And it was also awesome.
Nara's collaborative community project created a new knowledge of the Tatar culture in her hometown. One morning, I sit down with Zilia Kansura to learn more about her own culturally specific work, felting. Zilia was born and raised in Bashkortostan, in the South Ural Mountains. The place she calls home is part of the Russian Federation. She's here to lead and follow the ArtsLink program, guiding felt-making workshops in Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan.
This week with Zilia, we made felt rugs by hand.
Yes.
And it was magic. We did it together in a group. I would love to know the influence of your culture on this practice that you taught us.
So, first of all, I grew up with this material, but I was trying to avoid any felt making practices, as I was trying to avoid any work in the village. Instead, I wanted to watch cartoons and read some books or draw or paint, because I wanted to be a pop star. So I live in Vienna and I moved there 2 years ago. When full-scale invasion in Ukraine happened, I realized that I lost my home, but not like physically, but inside me. But not really. I used to live in Moscow. I was saying that I'm artist from Russia. And yeah, I started to realize what does Russia mean. And I felt bad. I was burning out. And I took this wool I brought from my home. I wanted this wool just warm me. And I spent time in my atelier just hugging this wool.
Step by step, she began using wool as her medium and felting as a performative collaboration.
I realized that a lot of traumas happened with my folk, with my people. We're still colonized by Russia, and like first thing we need to heal. And I was just healing my pain inside with this wool. It helped me because I grew up with this material, and people were making felting together.
You were describing to me when you first started creating felt pieces as a collective practice, how entire families engaged in making things for their homes. How did that feel to you?
It's how it's supposed to be. It's good. It's like collective healing. I know why people were doing that in my family, in my village. Women in countryside doing felting. It became safe space for them. I love these collective practices.
I'm privileged to join three American sound artists, Christine Diekman, Laura Nova, and Will Owen, to shape a three-part workshop we call Walkie Talkie. Walkie Talkie involves bodily engagement, paying attention, being present, using observational skills, and cultivating joy in sound. We set up opportunities for participants to listen in new ways.
So I thought we should get acclimated to this room. I know we've been in here for many days, but I don't know if any of you have thought about what it sounds like. So I'm going to ask everybody to stand up, and we're going to start listening to the room that we're sharing. So if everyone can face this direction and close your eyes, think about what is the loudest sound you hear. All right. I think we're acclimated, sensitized to this room. I want to begin by getting us to activate it with some of our own sound making.
They collect sound objects. Here's Russian noise artist Daria Orlova having fun with a balloon. They build amplifiers to create an interior soundscape.
I brought a ton of different stuff that I've laid out on the table. We have some tape, glue, cardboard, some fabric, a lot of different kind of water containers, and some cucumbers, and a lot of different stuff that you can use to try to manipulate the sound.
They set up that soundscape inside books. On another day, participants go outside in pairs to collect field recordings in the neighborhood.
So listening, I think, is an act of generosity to yourself and to others around you. And it's also a social practice and an artistic practice. So if you're not familiar with sound walks, it's a walk that you would take either by yourself or with others, aided, meaning you would have a recorder with you and you're listening through an amplified system, or you're just walking with people. and listening.
A mixdown transforms their audio impressions into a dynamic, layered composition.
What about you?
I'm from Kazakhstan.
You're from Kazakhstan.
Are you from Kazakhstan?
Participating artists become a temporary sound art community. I'm Kathy Bird. This is the Fresh Art International podcast. During the CEC ArtsLink program in Kazakhstan, I watch participants seize the moment to think more deeply about their socially engaged work. In collectively envisioning the future of their art practices, individual art makers and curators from five countries come together as a purposeful community, paying close attention to inclusion and access, issues and ideas, concept and creation. They begin to show the way to new possible futures for creative community engagement in Central Asia and beyond. If you like what you're hearing, please take a few minutes to rate and review our podcast. The John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, Emily Hall Tremaine Foundation, Locust Projects, and the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, and listeners like you make Fresh Art International possible. When you visit our site, you'll find many episodes about art and culture from around the globe. Stay tuned for more contemporary art talk.